It's Friday, May 13th, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, after a spot of geek news, we're speaking with John Jacobs about the massively multiplayer online role-playing game Project Utopia. Project Utopia has 200,000 players, and their economy of the game is based on the U.S. dollar. We'll get more into that. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome your conversation to join us. The phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Geek Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for NetSell. Sean, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning, Lyle.
Before we get into our discussion about this massively multiplayer role-playing game that has a basis of U.S. dollars in the game, meaning your character uses U.S. dollars, makes U.S. dollars, and potentially pulls out more money than you put into the game. Very cool. We'll get into that soon, but before we do that, let's start with some geek news. Sean, what's going on in the world of tech?
Well, this week Microsoft unveiled the Xbox 360, the next generation Xbox. It is much sexier looking than the old VCR looking Xbox in that it's silver, has lots of LEDs, and stands upright. This box is going to be powered by an IBM PowerPC based processor that includes three symmetrical cores, each running at 3.2 gigahertz each. Wow. Each core is capable of running two threads, which means two separate pieces of application data, processing two threads. And it includes 1 megabyte of L2 cache, which is memory that's on the processor die running at the speed of the processor, basically holds that data, hoping that it'll be used again very quickly. Very smart algorithms help that sort of thing. Floating point performance of the system is rated at 1 teraflop.
Is that fast?
That's a lot. Yeah.
Can you give us some idea of how much that is?
Well, supercomputers are rated by teraflops.
Wow. So this is in that range. Well, the start of that range,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah. It's significant for a game-playing device hooked up to your television. ATI is providing the graphics, 500 megahertz R520-based graphics processor. And it's going to have a 20-gig hard drive, a 12-speed dual-layer DVD drive, as well as 2 slots for flash memory. And it can connect with the 4 wireless controllers. They expect the launch to happen at Christmas time, most likely November. And game lineup includes NBA 2006, Call of Duty 2, Tony Hawk's American Wasteland, Quake 4.
I bet we're going to learn
a bunch of them here.
Ghost Recon 3. We're going to learn a lot more about these games, of course, next week.
What I want to know, though, will this thing actually, you know, what kind of HD support will this have? And,
yeah,
you know, will it upscale DVDs? That would be cool. If you had an HD player, you know, would you actually be able to take advantage of a higher resolution
right.
playback for DVD?
All right,
if I had that, I think I'd be very interested.
I'm going to switch over to the power side of the world. A new power plant is planned for Portugal, and this thing is going to be massive. It's basically a solar collector system, and it's going to be viewable from space. Whenever people say that, it's like, well, if you got enough optics, anything is viewable from space.
Yeah, but resolution.
It's going to be this massive solar array. It's going to be able to support 130,000 homes, pretty big. I was looking at the potential output of this, 116 megawatts. Now, to give you some idea, this is like the biggest solar array ever planned. It's got an output of 160 megawatts. Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant has an output of 2,174 megawatts.
Wow,
so
that
it's
is
still
huge.
Small compared to a nuclear
but
power
still,
plant.
I mean,
but
it's,
still,
that's
it's
significant.
A lot of power.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And while they're moving to solar, we're moving to coal. Wow.
Yeah, I know, it's kind of sad.
All right, so if anybody who's interested in digital,
that's everyone.
In optical HD DVD, the war of DVD. This is kind of interesting. So there are two camps. There's Blu-ray and there's HD DVD. Toshiba is pushing HD DVD and Sony is promoting Blu-ray. And talks have been that they're going to actually combine, just like DVD-R and DVD-R camps, you know, right. Ultimately combined and dual, you know, they started producing drives that had both technologies. Well, that'd be great if these guys did the same thing. Although Toshiba is now claiming that this is the progression towards a successful conclusion are unfounded and erroneous. So that made people stand back and say, maybe they're not as close to negotiating terms as people thought. Well, then Sony announced that they're going to release a CD-DVD Blu-ray player by early 2006. This thing can hold up to 25 gigabytes of data.
A burnable thing that can hold real data.
Yeah.
Right, good.
And, of course, they think they have the right technology because HD-DVD can only hold 15 gigabytes of data.
Mm.
And Sony, they each have a lot of major Hollywood studios behind them.
You know, this is such a battle. It's such a frustrating battle.
It's a big battle.
And all it comes down to is these patents. You know, one company's got a patent on one way of doing it.
Yeah, if you get your patent.
And you make some serious money when you can force people to do it.
So then Toshiba, not to be left behind,
said, of course not. The battle goes on.
Oh, well, our new triple-layer HD DVD standard can hold up to 45 gigabytes of data. You don't need Sony.
So, oh man! So Sean, what's the output of all this? What are people? What do you do? I mean, you and I both have Blu-ray burning drives. We don't have any discs. I mean, what's the technology that we're going for? If someone wants to buy a burner right now, a DVD burner, what should they get?
Wait. Well, right now the dual-layer DVD burners are pretty inexpensive. I'm very impressed by just how quick the prices come down.
Is there any media for them?
There is media, although the media is more expensive than standard traditional DVD media. Like five pieces is like $20-$25. So instead of being $1 a piece, they're more like $5 to $7 a piece.
And they hold 14 gigs instead of 8.
Yeah, they hold twice as much. Okay. No, they hold 8 gigs instead of 4.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So that's why this next generation is so important, because it significantly increases the capacity of an optical disc. I think Toshiba was probably hedging their bet. Let's talk to Sony. But if we can get our new triple-layer technology, you know, working in time, then we don't need Sony anymore. That's my own personal opinion.
So evil.
I think that's what we're seeing here.
All right. A week ago or so, I think it was last week's show, somebody called in and emailed in and said, okay, Tiger's out. What do you think? Should I do it? You know? And I said, yeah, go for it. And then we talked a little about it. It's like, yeah, don't embrace it right away kind of thing. Well, I said that if there's going to be some kind of malicious thing happening, something bad, I'd mention it. So here it is. Tiger was released a couple weeks ago, new operating system for OS X. It comes with Safari. It also comes with a system called Dashboard, which is basically really simple widgets all built in together. So one application that lets you view lots of data, weather reports and your address book and your calendar in neat ways. And it's really fun to develop because
it's so funny
because JavaScript.
All this kind of stuff happened back in the Windows 98 days.
Yeah.
And then everybody started moving towards, okay, we need to get all this stuff off
the
desktop.
It's like the active desktop thing.
Yeah.
But it's a standalone application that you run. So but the problem is the security vulnerability is that Safari in this new Tiger installation thinks that these packages of these dashboard things are safe to execute automatically. So if you embed a tag to download it inside your web page, Safari downloads it, runs it into dashboard, and it launches into dashboard as a running app. And guess what they can do? They can basically, these JavaScript applets, these things.
This is a big security hole.
Yeah, there's no triggering, no telling the user what's happening unless they're written a certain way. But you can basically write it so that it happens automatically. And then this dashboard app can do things like take you to a certain website every minute or two.
Oh.
So it's adware. And it's very hard to, can be adware. I guess is
yeah,
a very
adware.
Traditional adware.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to remove.
A little
remove
more
them.
Malevolent than typical.
If someone
adware.
Really did it maliciously, though, they probably could erase some of your content. So the long and the short of it is, if you go to Tiger, take Tiger and start it up and everything. Take Safari. When you first open it up, don't go anywhere except for Mozilla.org. Download Firefox and you're set. The other thing you can do is if you know Safari really well, you can go into Safari Preferences and turn off JavaScript if you want, or you can turn off safe downloads is actually more appropriate. So that's what you got to do, and I'm assuming Apple will make a fix. I don't know of it now. If you know of it now, you're welcome to call in during the second half of the show and participate and let us know. Got another news story, sir?
Yeah, if you're going to buy a 17-inch LCD flat panel, better do it soon, because tight supplies are going to push prices up by the end of the year, according to a report released by market research iSupply. They've been falling for quite a while, and no one thought that the price might turn. In fact, it seems like it was just going to continue to fall, especially for 17-inch, because I would think, you know, I would want more of a 19-20-inch. And I think that's probably what's happening here. People are starting to move towards larger flat panels now, so demand is moving more in that area. Also, notebooks, and because of the Apple revolution, are moving more towards widescreen, you know, 16:9 ratio instead of 4:3 like a standard television. And with those widescreen flat panels have to be made, they're made differently. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, demand for those wider ones are much higher, so they're making more of them and the price is sweeter.
So, yeah, makes sense.
So you're probably better off going towards a bigger one and even a widescreen.
Have you seen the app? Speaking of widescreen LCDs, the 20-inch Apple Cinema display.
You know, I saw that at NAB.
What do you think?
It had HDTVs next to it, and everybody was looking at the HDTV. You know, kind of standing back about 5 or 10 feet, and just a few of us were kind of walking towards the Apple display. I couldn't. It's just like the difference is amazing. It looks so beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, I was really impressed by that.
Well, I just, you know, I'm in education and work at UCSC as my day job, and I see the cost for education price, and their prices for those things, under $700. I couldn't believe it for these 20-inch cinema displays. Now, that's, of course, if you're in education. But
Lyle, you're
pretty
in
impressive.
Education.
Yes, I am. I can buy one a year, I think it is.
Oh.
If I didn't have a budding family and actually had extra cash. Who knows? You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. With me in the air room is Sean Cleveland. Sean, thank you very much for being here every week and making us sound so, so very good.
Oh, thank you, Lyle.
John Jacobs, our guest, ranks amongst the most prolific independent filmmakers of the last decade with over 30 movies to his credit as an actor, writer, director. And I can go on about his film information, but that's not why we've invited him here. The other thing John does, is he is the representation or the public face in a lot of ways to MindArc AB, a Swedish developer of games, specifically the massively multiplayer online role-playing game Project Entropia. John, welcome to our show.
Hey, Lyle. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in from Miami. I appreciate it. John, last night I downloaded this free application, a free game that works on a Windows machine, got it running pretty quick, and was prompted with making a person that would represent me in this 3D virtual reality, and it was kind of a blast. How did this beast of a project start?
Well, actually, it started probably in around 1995. I think the CEO, Jan Welter, had started to think maybe technology was ready to build a virtual universe. And over the next 4 years, while they prepared the paperwork, interestingly enough, the first MMORPGs came into development.
And massively
multiplayer online role-playing games, starting initially with Ultima Online, primarily Ultima Online and then EverQuest.
Let's take a break right there and kind of get into a little bit for people that don't know these games. They're basically 3D first-person games where a figure, a human figure, represents you, and lots of people play at the same time, and you can communicate to each other. And, of course, go on missions and kill monsters and things of that nature. So that's what we're talking about.
That's very much what they are. They're first person in the respect that you see through your own eyes, but they're still described as role playing games because building your skills is a big, big factor, and also allegiances, character development essentially,
mm-hmm.
is a factor in the whole.
Oh yeah, series. These players spend like a part of their lives. These games.
Exactly. I mean, you spend, typically speaking, the average MMORPG player spends 20 hours a week playing. Now, obviously, the advent of the MMORPG has only been around for, let's say, 98, 99, but I would say, I mean, this is a guess, okay? Since nobody's done this figure or I haven't read it, I would say, we're talking the average lifespan of an avatar of a hardcore gamer's avatar is 2 to 3 years.
That's how long they invest in one character.
Yes, that's how, and that is the beginning. And the reason that we're talking only 2 to 3 years is because essentially the majority of those games kind of get boring after 2 to 3 years, or another game comes on the market. What we're going to see now is that you're going to be able to port your characters from game to game.
Oh, that's very important.
And so, you know, essentially you're talking about creating an avatar that you might have for your lifetime.
Just like an email.
Exactly. Exactly.
Something you can continue
especially
building
if you've got a good email address, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you could create an avatar, I mean, these guys, your avatars become famous. I mean, they develop valuable. I mean, eBay is a great example. You don't shut your eBay account down when you've got, you know, 5,000 good you know, good endorsements, right?
Right.
And the value of an avatar that has a good reputation is it's actually priceless, because trade is a primary factor in online role-playing.
Now, Project Utopia went a completely different way than these earlier adopter games, in as much as it didn't shy away from the idea that these things did have real value. This stuff actually had real value. And instead of charging for your online service, you have a different model. And how does it work?
Well, basically, they identified, and Project Entropia identified that people would attach a real cash value to virtual items based on a couple of different factors. Number one, the amount of time that one would spend trying to acquire an item. And number two, the rarity of an item. Now, you know, if you spend 20 hours and manage to get some rare gun, right, and I don't have 20 hours to spend, and I want the gun because it's useful for the kind of hunting that I do, let's say it's like got extremely long range and, you know, it's got a fast trigger, I'll give you $50 for it, because I don't have, I mean, actually $50 would be cheap, because it took you 20 hours. That's like, what?
Right.
How much is that?
That's pretty cheap.
25 cents an hour?
Right, right.
I mean, actually, you know, there's a lot of, the labor actually still in virtual reality is cheap.
Right. So basically, I mean, even in the EverQuest, which is kind of the sample of these games, it's the big early game adoption of this level. I had a friend that was participating on it, you know, probably 12 to 14 to 20 hours a day. I mean, it was insane. He basically played the game and slept. That's it. And he did have some items that were worth a lot, and they were doing selling. They were going on eBay and selling this non-existing item to another player. And I remember he sold a shield for $400 or something.
So he's actually kind of making a living off playing the game.
I wouldn't say it's...
Can you get to that level, John?
Oh, absolutely. There's plenty of people that have not just made a living, but now they're turning these into significant businesses.
Now let's talk about the significant... One of the significant businesses, the reason why your game came to the privy of my eye, was that the developers, the group that owns the game system, decided to allow someone to kind of share in the world's ownership. And they made an island, created a virtual island, and auctioned it off on the system. And someone actually spent $23,000 on this virtual space.
Yeah, $26,000.
$26,000.
Okay, now let's understand the principle behind this.
Let's do that.
It's hard, obviously, for people to, you know, they're like, what, $26,000 for virtual land? Okay, first of all, people are spending 20 hours a week in there, right? Okay. I mean, that's an average. There are people spending 8 hours a day. But let's say the average gamer is 20 hours a week. They now, people that have spent, you know, a year or 6 months, maybe have $5,000-$10,000 tied up in guns and armor and this and that, right?
Right.
To have that much money tied up in items is, you know, it's a little worrisome.
Yeah.
You know, especially because the market rises and falls.
Uh-huh.
That was when it was identified that, hey, you know what? We need something more secure for people to invest in. Real estate. Okay, well, how do we have real estate and put a value on it? oh, well, hold on a second. The gamers are all roaming this real estate anyway and hunting left, right, and center and mining. So, hey, here's what we'll do. We'll give the owner of a given piece of land the hunting and mineral rights for that land, and they will be able to charge a tax of between 1 and 10% on all of the hunter or miner's revenues.
Wow.
Now, what happened immediately that this concept was put into place, real estate had a real, true value.
In this place where real estate represents three-dimensional graphing and image maps. I mean, we're not talking about real space. We're talking about virtual space.
Yes, we're talking about virtual space, but it's also, one has to take into account that you can't just create an unlimited amount of virtual space and sell it. Because obviously it takes servers, right? And then in addition to that, it takes a certain amount of people per server. So you have overhead. The developer has overhead to maintain the real estate.
But there's also more than that. The game's economy has to stay stable. If it doesn't, you get a lot of upset users and people stop playing the game and want their money back. I mean, you're building a virtual economy.
Exactly.
You're building a real economy, really.
Well, it is a real economy. And actually, that is the second development. Beyond people attaching a real cash value to the virtual items, what happens as a result of that, suddenly you have tens of thousands of virtual items that are being traded by tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of players. And then you have what develops is a market. And you develop a market value of things. So people can start trading in things they don't even need.
Wow.
Right? And that's where you have the economy really starts to take shape.
All right. That's the exciting part of the economy. We're talking about Project Entropia. Project Entropia is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game. It's free to download, free to play. You have to have a Windows machine. But if you want to buy something in this world, you got to put some cash into it. You got to put up some U.S. dollars. So you take your credit card, you put 10 bucks in, that turns into $100 of the game cash, which is called PED, and then you can go and buy your things that you want to buy and interface with people and dress your character in the way you want to dress it. It's an amazing experience. I did it last night. It's a fun thing to try. I didn't put any money in, but I went around and talked with people and played the game and interfaced with it. It's relatively pretty. Pretty impressive.
You know, unlike a game, though, because most massively multiplayer games, you know, you realize that you'll play it for a while, it's going to go away, a new version will come out, you start again. Or you're going to play some other game. But this is like a real, you're creating an online world here. It's almost like you're taking Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash or William Gibson's Neuromancer, you know, and trying to make a reality out of that.
And that's what it feels like. In fact, the license agreement, which I actually decided to read because you've got a great thing when you sign up online, if you don't spend some time on that page, it won't let you advance, which is kind of clever. So I actually read this. I normally don't read these license agreements. Really bad of me. But one of the things that really got me was that the license agreement itself said, this is not a game. This is a virtual experience, or this is an experience that you're participating in. It's not a game, and I'm assuming the legalese is the idea behind that is that because there's this money involved, if you call it a game, you're talking about gambling. You're not talking about that. You're participating in this space like Snow Crash, this virtual existence.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, it's okay. Since I've been in there since the beginning, it's very much an experience of evolution. You know, obviously, at day one, not all the content that can exist in a world like this is there. So actually, as the months go by and new technology is introduced, it's kind of like almost a microcosm of how life and technology has evolved on this planet. And you know, at the beginning, it's sort of, you know, all we've got is sort of stone materials to go out with. And then gradually, you know, you have the invention of metals. And as a result of that, the market is affected by the introduction of all these new materials. And what it does too is it adds to the longevity of the experience. I mean, all the downloads, all the new patches are all free. So actually, in 5 years' time, I can't wait to be playing the same thing in 5 years' time and find that, you know, I can travel to 60 different planets, and you know what I mean. And finally, alien races will be, you know, introduced, and you know, perhaps we'll even be talking about a three-dimensional immersive virtual experience.
Yeah, certainly. We are speaking with John Jacobs. He's representing Project Entropia, a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, 200,000 people playing. The economy is based on the U.S. dollar. Very fascinating. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
This week on This American Life, even now when she talks about it, Deborah has a hard time understanding what got her and her kids to the point where the kids decided just to vanish, run away.
And I remember Amanda saying, "Mom, we don't want to hurt you."
A mom and her two kids try to reconstruct what went wrong, and other stories of parenting gone awry, this week on This American Life, Public Radio International.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
May is California Museum Month, an annual event, and you are encouraged to visit a museum, science center, zoo, or botanical garden in your area. The geeks recommend the Digibarn up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, by the way. There will be over 100 diverse programs and events being held especially for this event. To learn more about events in your area, visit www.calmuseums.org.
You're listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments about Project Entropia, a massively multiplayer online role-playing game based on the U.S. dollar, the start of virtual reality, I would say, in some ways, you're welcome to join the conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Those numbers are good in California. If you want to do it virtually, you're welcome to send us an email. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us, and we'll answer your questions in that regard as well. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing Internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, and MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geek this morning is Sean Cleveland. And over the phone from Miami, we're speaking with John Jacobs about Project Entropia, an amazing virtual experience. Highly recommend if you've got a Windows machine, take a look at project-entropia.com. Try out the game. See if you like it. And if you do, you can start investing all your time and money in it. The conversation phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or use the Internet. Visit geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. John, last night when I went up there and played this game, installed it and such, the first thing that I got that was just wonderful was the idea of making your avatar. The tools up there are kind of that you get the skeleton of a kind of naked human form. You can choose male or female in generalities. And then you got all these control factors, you know, typical things like skin color and hair color and eye color. And then you can, like, change the shape of the face, and you can change the proportions of the body if you want a really small person, short and stubby, tall and lanky, long legs versus short arms. I mean, there's all these features you can do, and then the face detail is really incredible, too. So I'm going through this whole thing, and I finally made the character that I liked or thought I would like it, whatever, and pushed, you know, create. And my thought was that the next step would be I get to pick the clothes, you know, because this is kind of – they're kind of in the underwear kind of form. And instead of doing that, I just kind of went into the game. And so I'm like, am I naked? I found out pretty quick I had this orange suit on, but everybody else had really cool clothes on. What's going on there?
Okay, well, the orange suit is the noob outfit. And that's
the noob?
The newbie outfit, standard issue to everybody. And I think you actually have a pair of shorts on under there, so you can strip it off. And basically, once the ways to start getting into fashion is you either have to find somebody who is crafting clothes and, you know, do a deal and buy some stuff from them, or go to the auctions, and there's auctions that are planet-wide, and, you know, see what you like.
Now, when you say go to somebody that's an expert in this, you mean somebody's developed their skills of the character to make clothes, but then does the player actually make clothes, or does the character kind of spit out stuff?
Well, the player actually makes clothes. Basically, there's a blueprint system, and what you do is you collect the blueprints for the, you know, basic patterns and designs, and then you have to, as a tailor, you would then have to acquire the raw materials for actually making the clothes. So you would have to buy skins off hunters or wool and thread, and then you would start you know, endeavoring to make clothes. And obviously, you're not going to be very good at the beginning. You're going to have to invest time and money to build your tailoring skills. And gradually, as you succeed, you get better and better at it. And then you have to deal with the fact who's going to buy it, you know? And, you know, I can tell you, when you start tailoring, you better be prepared to, you know, to invest before you find that you can make unique enough items.
Okay, so you mean you've got to buy the raw materials, so that's the investment you're talking about, and the time in creating clothes.
Yeah, and also you're going to, I think you're going to, like anything else, I mean, do you think your first shirt is going to be saleable? I mean, I think you're probably going to waste yards and yards of cloth before you even make a shirt. So you're going to have to buy the raw materials, right? And then you're going to have to deal with the loss of the fact you're going to make a mess for the first, you know, few tries.
So is the economy inside the game, does it use real money all throughout, or is there special money inside the game as well?
No, it's real money. I mean, you do exchange it to the Project Entropia dollar, and then you exchange it back again. But there's no fake money. You don't get to play. You don't get to play it with tokens. You know what I mean? I have to. There is one thing that you didn't mention that's very important. You don't. Not only is the software free. Download it. You can get in the world. You can start wandering around and talking to people. But in order to start to buy stuff, you don't have to use your credit card. Actually, start looking for work, and there is work available immediately. There's two now major professions for somebody who is new and wants to get a feel. The first one is gathering sweat, and how you do that is you go and you find sort of monsters on the planet, you know, and you chase them down. And you chase after them and you collect their sweat. That sweat is then sold to miners who also mine something called Force Nexus. When combined, they create the ingredient called Mind Force, which is used for developing psychic abilities.
Okay,
and the market for Mind Force is at actually about 500% of the raw material value.
Wow.
So, for example, let's say you're a miner, and you go and you lay some bombs, and you find, you know, $10 worth of Force Nexus, and then you go and you pay some new guy who's collecting sweat, you know, a couple of bucks for the sweat. So you spend $12. The market value is $50 for the Mind Force. So there's a very healthy market in it. In addition, as a result of the land ownership and the ability to tax players, what's being introduced is something called land management. The owner of real estate can actually breed and manage the livestock, the game on the land. Now, in order to do that, people have to collect dung. Right, from these creatures that are roaming the planet. So a new person can wander the world, be collecting dung, collecting sweat, and there's a market for it immediately.
Wow.
And basically, it is labor intensive, and there is the more experienced players do not want and do not have the time to go around collecting sweat or dung. And so you're immediately welcomed into the economy. And there are, I mean, if you combine, let's say, the fact that you might have some time to invest in playing in an online universe, right?
Right.
Combine that with, let's say, maybe a little bit of a talent for buying and selling, right? Suddenly you're going to be able to build your net worth and from scratch.
So if you've built up a sizable amount of entropy dollars, is that what they're called?
Yes.
Can you convert them to real dollars?
Yeah,
absolutely.
You can convert them back.
They're absolutely tradable. All right, we're getting a couple calls.
Wow.
One, not really on topic. I'm going to ask people to go ahead and call and only talk about on topic because this is such a great discussion about online virtual realities, online games. So we're going to go with Heidi, though, and answer her question. Heidi, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. My question is not on the topic.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm in the market for a new computer, and I had a very old computer that was a hand-me-down from a friend, and I'm part of the generation that doesn't really like computers.
Okay.
So what I'm looking for, I have a Windows machine, and people have been talking up the Mac, and I'm an artist, and they think that I would do really well with it, and I'm willing to spend the extra money, but I'm not really sure if what my best bet is. And what I need is I need something that's easy to learn how to use, and possibly is there some kind of manual or book that comes with these? I need a word processor.
Okay, you're in Palo Calero Canyon. I don't know
right. The
community college there. Up in this area, it's Cabrillo, and there's great classes on starting to learn computers, and that's the way I recommend it. Get into a class and get into a place where you've got a computer in front of you and you haven't made any investment really except for a little bit of class time, and you've got experienced people, and you've got a whole bunch of people around you in the same place that you are. So that's what I would recommend for starting out. I don't want to stay a lot on this question, but I think that you're probably going to be... I mean, I normally make the recommendation if that you're used to the operating system, stick with it.
Uh-huh.
But in this case, because you're really looking at it, I think a great bet for you would be to get in front of a Macintosh and play with it and see how you like it. And there's a couple ways to do that. One is you can go to an Apple store. In this area, it's kind of hard. You got to go over to, like, Palo Alto or something. But there's also most university campuses have them. So up here in Santa Cruz, UCSC has a bookstore. Now, you can't buy stuff there because you're not a student, but you can go in there and play with their machine and take a look at it and ask some questions. Because if you're going to make an investment like this and you're not really sure what you want to get, touching it and playing with it's going to be a really good bet for you.
Okay, so you're saying I can't learn it out of a book?
You can to some degree, but it's not really that you need to. The best way, in my opinion, to learn computers, nice and generic, is to play with them. It's like, how do you know how to stack blocks? Or how do you know how to stack something on top of a table? You know because as a child, you played with those things. Investigation is going to be the best bet on you. Reading about it in a book is going to give you a feel for how someone else's take on learning it is, but unless it's someone like you that went through the experience at a late age of learning computers, you're not going to get a lot of you're not going to glean a lot from it, in my opinion. How's
okay.
that? I'd go with a Macintosh, by the way, but that's
okay. Okay. And in your opinion then, is it a sort of easier, more user-friendly system?
Sure. It's hard to say because, of course, I'm a super user.
Right.
I don't have a problem with computers. So when I say it's easier to use, that's not real. That's I use both and I enjoy both of them for different reasons. And most people that I'm around that don't have a lot of computer use are using Macintoshes, and I find it's a little easier to support them.
I have to agree. I'm very entrenched in the PC world, and it seems like new users I have an easier time picking up Macintosh than to do a PC.
Uh-huh.
Heidi, good luck on your purchase.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right,
bye-bye.
Bye. I think from Santa Cruz we have Law. Is that true?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Law. What's your question?
Speaking of the Macintosh system,
mm-hmm.
I was wondering if us Macintosh users might be able to hope to play this Entropy game in the future.
Right. John, that's a darn good point. We have lot of Mac users. What's going on?
It really is a good question. I would say that Mac users' best bet is when they create software that enables you to run Windows games,
I think that's going to... I mean, there is. You can get virtual PC, of course.
Yeah, no, I haven't tried that, but I've wondered. I mean, will that support an intensive game?
I think you're going to be pushing the bounds trying to play...
Probably.
Take a virtual PC thing and run a full game.
This, for now, it's worth a shot?
Well, if you've got it, try it, of course. If you've got a virtual PC, please try it, and then tell me if it works, because I'm very curious.
Yes.
You can, of course, send a Geeks email by going to geekspeak.org. You can ask questions that way, too. If you'd like to call in, phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're talking about Project Entropia, a massively multiplayer online game that's not available for the Macintosh, as sad as that might be for Law in Santa Cruz and for myself. It's not working. And does that mean that you're not going to be putting money into that?
Just means that for the moment, really the focus of the developers is just to keep up with the demands of the existing user base for more technology and really and more content.
But John, you're missing that 8% of computer users. How can you survive? I know it's a hard thing to invest in.
You know, I have my my G4 right open right in front of me. It would be a great thing. Actually, all the years I've had my Mac, I was always frustrated. That's why I bought a PC. In fact,
right.
In fact, you know, and the price of PCs actually is, I mean, really from Dell and Gateway, they're so cheap these days. If you really you know, want to spend a lot of time playing online games, I mean, you might as well invest $400-$500.
Or more because of the video cards and stuff. Lana, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
All right. I got a couple questions. I got a friend of mine chatting with me through AIM and is asking a great question. John Compton from Sacramento, I believe, is where you're living now. Is there a finite amount of PED or cash in this world? Or is there some sort of algorithm that increases it as users put... I mean, how does that work?
That's a great question, John.
Well, the PED is defined only by the amount put in, right? So the actual... It's all defined by, you know, what people put in. But they're call it, you know, from day one, you know, there was $1 million. I'm not going to... I mean, really, I shouldn't put a figure on it. You know what I mean? But there was raw materials in existence. You know, so there was, you know, there was stuff to be bought and sold from the get-go.
Okay. But, all right. Well, let's talk a little bit about how it In some ways, this kind of blows your mind. You think this is a joke, but it is real. But when you start thinking about the dynamics of the cash, I mean, let's take an example of probably the most successful massively online role-playing game right now, which is a competitor, if you will, of Project Utopia, is World of Warcraft by Blizzard Entertainment. Over 1.5 million people have signed up and played this game, and there's peak levels of like 200,000 people playing at one time in the United States. It's in Europe. It's in Korea. I've got one of the standard geeks that used to be here all the time until he got a day job that kind of interfered with the show, John Tracy. His wife and he and his son play this game together. They probably play about 12 hours a week together as a team. And this is a fantasy world, so there's no like high-tech, laser guns and things of that nature. But that system, you got to buy a $50 game, and then it's like $15 a month to play it. So when you take... You know, a million people playing this game at $15 a month, you're talking some serious money here. So people are willing to put that much money in. And if you put in $15 or $10 a month into Project Entropia, which you're not forced to do, your character is getting, you know, money coming in all the time. And your net worth, if you will, of that character increases. It doesn't, like, diminish. You actually keep up that stuff, and you could potentially sell it.
Exactly. I mean, okay, let's just take that scenario. You've got a family. They pay $50 a month. $50 to buy the game, then they spend $15 a month in their subscription fee.
There's actually, of course, with family accounts, there's cheaper amounts. But anyways, go on.
Okay, so let's call it $15 a month. So over, let's say, a six-month period, they've spent $140 total.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But they've also spent, as you said, 12 hours a week, I think.
Right.
So that's 25 weeks, that's 275 hours or something like that. So 275 hours plus $100 and something, right? I mean, how much is that 275 hours worth? Let's say $10 an hour that they've lost at the end of 6 months, right?
Right.
So that's what, $2,700 in time plus $125 in cash gone, right? Now, they had fun, and they say, okay, that's entertainment value. The thing about it is, when these games were developed, I don't think that the developers initially realized, and we're talking 5-6 years ago, that they were going to suck 20 hours of people's weeks away.
Right.
I mean, that's half a working man's week. It is the responsibility. I mean, you have a responsibility, if you're going to do that to people, to give them the ability to trade in real cash and turn those hours into productive hours. And that's the thing that, you know, Entropia completely supports that. So if you'd invested $15 a month in buying stuff, you'd still have, at the end of 6 months, your $120 or whatever it is, $90, and you'd also have the fruits of 120 hours or whatever it was. I'm sorry, my numbers are...
It's okay. We get the idea of it.
You'd have the fruits of your labor.
Okay, now we're talking about labor. And again, my friend from Sacramento, John Compton, asks, what about capital gains tax?
Well, you know, that's going to... I think that really you're in a position, as long as you don't cash it in, right, you're not going to have to declare any gains. You know what I mean? Because... It's still subject to loss. I mean, you can...
Right.
You know,
it's
you
like having a stock.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, exactly. It's
okay,
really the
but
same.
Let's say you cash out. First of all, where's this game based? Where are the servers? What country supports it?
The servers are spread actually across different countries in order to, you know, best...
And is the company an international company?
Yeah, it's a Swedish company.
So it's pretty complex on how this whole thing works.
Yeah, I mean, Sweden is a very, you know, it's one of the most advanced internet online nations in the world.
Sure.
I mean, they're very, you know, they're a great country. They're very strict laws. So, I mean, actually, Entropia is pretty limited in they have to play it very, 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 you know, safe in a way.
Right.
I think it'd be very exciting to see them have a little more freedom.
Okay. The concern that I have about this whole game is, if your developers don't keep up to speed with the other online games, and especially since, and we'll talk about this in a second, Sony recently released that they're going to change possibly EverQuest's idea and allow online auctioning, which means it's really going to be a competitor. So when that takes place and the game world start getting better than you guys, if that happens, users will start leaving en masse to go play a better game, a better environment.
Well,
they'll want to cash out. And are you going to be stuck with this giant bill to pay back to people?
Well, first of all, you know, you have to understand that the market value versus the raw material value is very different. So, you know, I might think that I have $20,000 worth of gear,
mm-hmm.
right? But actually, if I recycle it back to them, you know what I mean, and just you know, they give me my raw value, I might find I've only got $2,000. Okay, so basically, $18,000 of my net worth is only going to come if somebody else is willing to pay me for it, right? Not
right.
the developer, but other gamers. That's how a market works, right? I mean, it's like if I've got a gold nugget, you're only going to give me, you know, what the $375 an ounce, right? Whereas if I turn it into a beautiful necklace and sell it to some rich guy's wife, he's going to give me 5 G's.
Wow.
So there's a big difference.
So how many people are playing this right now?
There's 250,000 accounts.
And how many? What's your peak?
The peak in terms of the...
people playing at one time.
You know, it's probably in the... you know, I'm not really allowed to say.
Okay, that's fair enough.
And is there property? Is there insurance for these things? You know, or...
is there insurance for...
Well, what I'm trying to say is if you put a lot of money out, like this guy did for the island...
Yes.
What's to say that the server's not going to go down, or what's his guarantee that it's going to be there next year and 5 years, 10 years?
Well, as long as Project Entropia exists, then his island, you know, exists.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, you know, it's really like a country. I mean, you have to look at it like a country, but you have to look at it like a virgin country.
Right.
And, you know, yes, and this answers the question about the competition. I mean... let's say you got 5 islands, right, in the Caribbean, and they're all virgin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Sony comes along and develops 1 island. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we know they've got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to turn it into a really fabulous, you know, thing. Then, you know, you got some, you know, interesting European company that comes and develops another one. You know what? They're going to bring a whole different aesthetic to the table.
Right.
And the community that develops there is going to have their own spirit. And so you're not just competing in the end with money. You're it's communities and they end up actually, it ends up being the community that's more significant in the longevity of an MMORPG than the developer. To some extent, or equally. I mean, if you go into one of these worlds and nobody talks to you, right, you're going to leave pretty damn quick. It doesn't matter how good the game is.
Right.
Right? But if the community's all, you know, they welcome you, you know, you get participate.
Let me tell you what that felt like last night when I joined up just to try this game out before talking with you. I went on it, spent a lot of time building up my character, then I went in and was like, I tried to figure out what was going on. I didn't know I could go collect sweat and dung for people. But so what I did was I went up to some people in a big area near a teleporter, and I said, hey, anybody, can you tell me about this game and stuff? And someone just came up and said, you know, I think my character's name was Tam or something. And so I said, Tam, come on over this tree. So I go over the tree, and there's a character named Zib, and Z-I-B. And Zib was just great. So we started chatting about what the game was like and how I could get started. And he or she, I don't really know, is a male, actually, I think from Canada. He actually finally told me, 29, and he plays, I can't recall, I think it was 12 hours a day, and he's put about $1,500 into the game. So this is someone that's playing a lot, and he's, you know, I told him it was a radio show the next day, and he was really supportive of answering all my questions, and he invited another player over because he wanted me to get a feel for other players. There's some guy came over that said, you know, $12,000 he's invested in the game, and 20 hours a week is his standard. I think it was like he played as much as he possibly could. And then we started talking about clothes. We all started talking about, you know, who had nice clothes on and where the tailor happened. And this female character came up with this blue dress on. And I said, well, that's a nice suit, and where'd you get that? And she's like, I spent about 250 to 300 ped, which is 23 to 30 to, you know, $30, U.S. dollars, to make her clothes look nice. What a kick.
Well, my sunglasses are $100 I paid for them.
Right. And, your real ones.
No, in Entropia.
In Entropia.
And the amazing thing was, is I bought them right at the beginning when they first appeared in there, expecting, you know, to have paid over, you know, way too much. And just because of the fact that when they were implemented, they had put a limit on the amount that would be available, the price has held up for 2 years. People still pay $100 for those songs.
Wow, that's really great. Interesting.
By the way, you know, I am the official spokesman for Entropia. Uh-huh. I'm not employed by them.
Oh,
okay.
I'm a gamer.
What's your character's name?
Never Die. And he's one of the most famous gamers in Entropia. I actually, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm in the movie business and entertainment. I actually recorded a song. It became the big hit on all the jukeboxes. It's called Gamer Chick. And
I've heard that.
And actually, for anybody listening, if they're interested, you can go to ifilm.com, and if you search Gamer Chick music video, you will find a music video that was made for the game in it's on iFilm.
Okay, I'm going to have to go up and meet you on that one-line game. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. We have been speaking with the fabulous, I would say, John Jacobs, or in the world of Project Entropia, Never Die, the spokesman but not employer of the employee of the game, and about this wonderful, massively multiplayer, free game to play investment opportunity. You can learn more about Project Entropia by going to just go to geekspeak.org and click on it from there. That's easier. And John Jacobs is a filmmaker. He's an avid gamer. John, thank you very much for participating on Geekspeak today.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's great. And look forward to seeing you in Entropia. You just got to find me in there, right?
I'll do my best.
This is a very interesting technology. One to watch.
Just ask for Never Die, and you know what? Somebody will find me.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. The Geek this morning was Sean Cleveland. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you for participating in GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. We will be back next week, as we are every week at 10 o'clock here on KUSP, to talk about E3. E3 is a giant gaming
Electronic Entertainment Expo. Happens down in L.A. at the Staples Center.
And
largest
our New York
game show in the world.
Our New York correspondent, Dee Dee Hubbard, is going to be going to the show and then coming back up here. We'll be doing that. We'll also talk about Star Wars, of course, which opens on Thursday. And us being geeks, we have to focus on that. For all of you that called in today and for emailing in, thank you very much for participating with GeekSpeak. Without you, it would just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that?
I do.
I welcome everyone to come back next week to talk about E3. It should be a blast, and to talk about Star Wars.
A lot of big news, yeah.
This program is supported in part by our community of contributing listeners. To become a contributing listener, visit kusp.org, and thank you for your support and participation. Coming up next is Open Road with Matt Pierce, and at 1 p.m., Two Steps from the Blues with Charlie Lang. two wonderful programs. The entire day of KOSP on Fridays is music, and it's just wonderful. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Arto. On the web, we're at KUSP.org. And, of course, GeekSpeak is at GeekSpeak.org. For KUSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell, and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Pentagon is recommending that 33 major bases be shut down in 2020.